Toy Power Podcast is a free podcast made possible by the support of our awesome Patreon sponsors. Head to toypowerpodcast.com and see how you can help.
Oh yeah, this is power.
Hello and welcome to Toy Power, the podcast where we talk toys and everything pop culture. G'day, it's Trent here, and it is so wonderful to have your company today for episode 348. This week on the show, we're going to hit up all the latest news, jump into a very, very brief, spoiler-free review of Dune 2.
Scotty and I will... Nothing about that movie is brief.
No. That's right. I saw Neil deGrasse Tyson talking today about the sandworm and how it moves, and he's like, have you ever seen a snake just power towards you without wriggling side to side? And I'm like, good point.
Yeah.
But it's sci-fi, right? Yeah, magic. And then we'll jump into latest scores. We've got in the studio tonight, Frank.
Hello, hello.
Scotty.
Hello, and you can call me Scott Muad'Dib.
Oh, yes. The sand mouse.
Yes,
yeah,
that's so right.
What Moldy means is a special sand mouse.
Cute little sand mouse.
I got no reactions whatsoever there other than a grin of delight on Trent's face. Everyone else is completely blank.
You got to pick your Fremen name.
Yeah, well, so, that's right. Yeah. I stole mine from Paul.
Yeah. We've got Ben.
G'day, g'day.
And special guest, hot off a sensational opening night of retro cinema, Brett Owen. Join us again. Welcome, Brett.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me.
Now, do we have a... We're going to talk about that next week?
Yes.
More detail? Yeah.
So please come back next week.
Come back next week to hear about...
retro rewind.
Yeah. Like just Brett, seeing retro films at the cinema. Something very special.
Yep.
Yeah. Brett read his calendar wrong as turn up a week early, but we'll forgive him. We'll include him.
That's right.
He's on the hype train.
All right. We're going to hit that latest news button in a sec.
Yep.
But who else got that moment where you're watching Batman in the cinema? And you hear that clip from our latest news. It's like, I recognize that, the countdown.
And I was like, oh, yeah, there it is.
I
was looking for you when that happened. Yep. I'm scanning the room going, where's Trent?
I was sitting behind you.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But I wanted, honestly, just speaking of the cinema, you know, experience and things, I wanted to be the girl behind us who obviously hadn't seen the film before and was commenting, Oh gosh! Oh, wow.
the things that we all knew had been coming. Yeah, for the last 20 years.
You know, that's one of my genie wishes to go and see my favorite film again for the first time. Honestly, so
yeah,
very jealous.
Very good. All right, let's hit the button.
3, 2.
There it is.
Yeah, 1. That's it.
Music. Back.
So, what have you got for me?
A new hat. Obligatory McFarlane time.
Yeah, they've been dropping too much stuff. This one is, I believe, a new set of comics coming out called The Ghost of Krypton, and features basically a bunch of Superman-adjacent people. We get a Superman from Earth 2, we get Zod, we get Brainiac, and another just regular Superman with crazy McFarlane armor.
Looks like Metallo, like Fuse.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he?
Yep.
These are all coming. These are part of an upcoming comic wave. So these, I believe, all come with a one-shot issue each. Pre-orders go live have gone live as of a couple of days ago. So we got Superman with some crazy looking, almost looks like gothic style armor. He's got a mask for a reason I have yet to determine. We get the ghost of General Zod, which is glow in the dark, do you reckon, Ben?
Yeah, definitely. Yep. Yeah, that's a selling point.
Yep. That looks pretty cool. We get Earth 2 Superman with his all blue and the white S logo. And probably the coolest version of Brainiac I think I've ever seen, looking like some sort of a transformer, I guess, with multiple limbs going on.
Independence Day wants their body look type back.
Thinking that.
Yeah. Yeah, so these are pretty cool. I thought, yeah, they were the fact that they all come with each comic book has, you know, that particular character on the front, and you got to collect all four to own the miniseries sort of thing. So,
is the series only available through this Page Punches, or will it be?
No, that'd be interesting to see whether it's like a, you know,
because that's a pretty
alongside.
Yeah, that's a pretty bold move to release a, you know, comic book. You only,
can only get it through action figures.
Toys. Ooh, so
the new Build a Figure is Build a Comic kind of thing.
There you go. Get
page one page with each figure. All right, more McFarlane.
Hmm.
Who's got this one?
I can't actually read the screen now. I can. This is some more retro style figures coming out of the Todd, and this we're getting a first appearance Batman. It's been done by a number of different toy companies, but. Yep. This is, I think, the first time the Todd is getting to it. So you go back to that original Detective Comics.
Number 27.
27, yeah. That's with Batman flying across the rooftops. But the biggest part of this is the purple gloves. That sort
I thought you were
going
to say the blue wrench.
The blue wrench, yes. I've never seen that accessory before. But he's looking very cool. Double-jointed elbows, double-jointed knees, and the that very strange torso articulation, which I haven't quite wrapped my head around. 22 moving parts, and he's got four extra hands, wrench, and display base. He's cool. I remember back when DC Direct did a wonderful version of this Batman, and it is hard to top. But yeah, for modern collectors, if you do want an OG Batman, it's your time to shine.
It'd be cool if the cape was sprawled out like the original comic cover, like that.
Yeah, that'd be a cool accessory. Just plug in to make it to recreate that comic cover.
Yeah, definitely.
10 cents for Detective Comics.
That's the first Batman, ever.
Yeah.
What's that retail for now these days, Brett?
Oh, I don't know. If we all sold our houses and put our money together, we could probably buy one. So yeah.
Just don't read it in a treehouse during the rain. We've also got a just very, very classic Batman from, I think, when he starts off in the Nightfall storyline.
Yeah.
He's essentially, this is what, if you imagine the Bruce Timm Batman, the animated series Batman, but in a sort of almost coming out of the late 80s into the early 90s style of comic book art.
Correct. Yep.
He looks very much, this is what Bruce Timm would have drawn his inspiration from in doing Batman the Animated Series.
So with the Nightfall storyline leading into this, Batman had that traditional blue-gray costume. And when we go to the black costume here, that is sort of his first return, his first triumphant return to form as Batman at the end of that Nightfall, Night's End storyline. So this is the first time we really see him in black as the modern style of Batman.
Mm. Yeah, it's a very cool look.
Oh, and so good.
And look, I must say, I love the Nightfall storyline. And part of my love of that story of the designs for Nightfall and Azrael, or the Azrael Batman, which is John Paul Valley, who takes on the mantle while Batman is recovering from his broken back inflicted by one Bane. And there's sort of two very famous versions of the look. There's the blue version and the red version. Yep. This is the red version. The helmet is super cool, but this is the first time I've seen the sort of cape, which is a series of mechanical, almost like blades, huge blades, six blades in total that would fan out to form a very, very cool looking cape. Again, 22 points of articulation. Very, very cool. What do you guys think of this one?
It better come with a stand because that thing's going to fall over like buggery. He's got these massive, and don't get me wrong, it's a cool look, but it's going to make him so back heavy. Like,
I wonder if you can fan it out to kind of get the weight distribution happening.
Even on the pose on the image here we're looking at, he's very hunched over. He's leaning forward. So
this is almost the final form that Azrael takes as he builds his armor. And one of the inclusions he adds to his armor towards the end of the storyline is sort of like an armored attachment to his wrist where he can shoot batarangs or miniature batarangs out of it, like a machine gun sort of style. And you can see those heavy armored attachments to his arms there with sort of a feeder going around to the back as well, making it look absolutely amazing. It's bonkers. This figure stands out to me. I love this storyline. I haven't bought a McFarlane figure for a while, but I will hunt this down.
You're back
I
on want the trip.
Yeah.
Nice.
Very good. All right. This is an image that has been doing the rounds quite a bit. Playmates are going quite literally back to the source material. Now, no, they're not redoing those horrific figures that from, what, 2012 and doing them in a different paint. These are – it's a teaser image for new group of turtles that are based on quite literally the first ever drawing done by Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird. So to anyone who doesn't know the history, they're going to look at these and go, what is wrong with these deformed turtles? they don't have the typically, you know, superhero physiques with the, you know, bulging muscles that we're used to. They've got very sort of squat legs and weird arms with practically no shoulders. They look more like an actual turtle than a roided out hero. But yeah, it looks like Playmates are going to be bringing these later on in the year. Thoughts?
Do you think they're all the same physique?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Okay. Why has Leonardo got knee pads and none of the others have?
That's a good point. I think they've fallen off the other ones.
They clip on there?
with those feet, there's nothing going to fall off.
Oh, yeah. They're going on.
I'd be very surprised if they're different. Different bodies, at least, maybe, you know, different accessories to help, you know, identify them. I mean, does anyone know the very first Ninja Turtle ever drawn?
Michelangelo.
Yeah. So, and I think as part of that, the nunchucks were actually drawn in that first ever picture, strapped to his forearm, which they've sort of recreated. There's got little clips on his forearm to hold them there. So, it'd be interesting to see. They obviously have to take a little bit of license to do all four.
It's but pretty cool. They've cut the colours off.
Yeah.
The colours, yeah. They've kept the colours as the original Playmates style. Yeah. So, you know, Leonardo's that olive green, Raphael's that bright green, and then the mix between Michelangelo and the brown of Donatello. But also they've really hyped up the colours of their bandanas, and it's not just all red. You know, Donatello's is almost like a magenta purple rather than a deep purple.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. Their weapons are really cool. Leonardo's handle looks warped, which is kind of neat. And I think they're cool. I don't know if do you think they're going to be sold as a four pack or individually?
Well, it's got that base plate, so it might come as a four pack.
Yeah,
that's a good call.
It makes sense to me to release this as a four pack. I always found it was a bit weird when they Playmates did their kind of comic book line. It was definitely after NECA had done their comic book line. It sort of felt like a bit of a cheap repaint. They didn't feel very good. They came in single packs. And I remember buying them and going, I'm virtually buying the same turtle four times because they looked so identical. Mm. I do like the fact that they have used the traditional color scheme that they made famous, that Playmates made famous. These are the Playmates color scheme. So I think that's very clever. And what we're going to see is... have you seen that baggy pick going around from NECA where you sort of look in the bottom of that bag and there is a very similar style of turtle in there? So I think what you're going to see is NECA are going to put out the same sort of turtle in more of a NECA style, but I think NECA are going to be stuck with the red bandanas all looking 100%. The same.
Yeah. Also notice that Donatello's got a strap going around his shoulder, whereas none of the others do. So that's kind of neat to differentiate the belts.
And it seems like Mikey's nunchucks actually have real chains, which is it's not something you see often on a Playmates, you know, sort of price figure. Mm. Very interesting.
All right. Sewer Lair time. Those of you that jumped in on the NECA cartoon style Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Sewer Lair will now have another add-on you can get. This was always on the cards. It is Donnie's Lab. I think it's the same big sort of shape. I don't know if this one's slightly smaller, but it's got a hefty price tag coming in at $299.99 USD with a shipping date end of August 2024. So just let's picture this. It's essentially three walls, right, of sewer. It's sort of brickwork. There's tunnel holes
And then it's pretty much just a big open space where there's a couple of pipes going across the walls. And then we've got the Donnie's lab equipment. So there's like a table, there's a computer, there's a sort of workbench with opening drawers, and you can hide some of his inventions in those drawers. And then, like, I think there's a little version of the portable transporter that featured in one of the NECA kind of mini dioramas that they released, and a few little bits and bobs that sort of go on the wall. There's not heaps to it, but it's obviously quite large and quite a lot of paint apps going on here. It can feature underneath that street diorama that NECA have put out. So that's pretty cool. And they do say that there's two different modes. It can be displayed in shelf mode and as seen on TV mode. I'm not quite sure what that means, but obviously there's it's sort of a you can piece it together. It's modular. Yeah. So different display options.
I wonder if shelf mode isn't like taking those walls and splaying them out so it acts like a diorama for your shelves.
That would make sense. Yeah.
I think it'd be cool if those – so we're looking at three little extension pipes, and only one of them it looks like is a hole in the wall completely that you could put your hand through. The other two are blocked off. One's a shelving unit and one's just a – like looks like there's a work material and, you know, machinery going on there. It'd be really cool if you could pop them out and move them around so that you, when you connect the two, you know, centers together, you could decide which hole you're going to go through. You know,
I think it sort of does. Looking at the image on the next screen here, looks like you can choose where you want those.
That's exactly what I was trying to say. Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. That's an ingenious idea. Mm. Are we missing, you know, in the famous the intro for the cartoon, Donnie's got that huge machine that he's pulls the down and then it explodes. Are we missing that piece of machinery?
Was that ever in the
this?
Show?
Probably not. But
that's probably more iconic, isn't it?
That's the most iconic, seeing that for, you know, every afternoon for my childhood.
Get on the phone to Randy Fork, Ben.
Yeah.
I want that.
Got a new idea for you.
Yeah.
What do we think of the price tag? $299 USD.
To justify that price tag, I think it needs to come with a figure, like some sort of exclusive version of Donatello that might be pretty similar to the main figure, but he's got some goggles or some sort of effects or something like that. Then I could go, $299, you can sort of get behind that. But, I mean, that's $299 US, and you're talking over $350 plus to get it here in Australia, really. So for what is ultimately, you know, a background.
Have they talked about how many they've got penciled in for this, you know, dioramas or, you know, silver layers?
This is two of three. They've done the main one, and then I think there's another room off the other side that
I think the kitchen room, maybe, where they have to eat the pizza and stuff.
Yeah.
So $369, that's $900 by the time. That's almost $1,000 worth of plastic.
Mm. And how much was their big towering diorama things? What did they go for?
From memory, they were just over $100, I reckon.
Yeah.
They didn't, maybe $200 here, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, sounds about right.
There's a lot less paint apps in that, in fairness, because it's the same sort of brickwork in three levels, but I don't know, just...
And that was probably released 5 years ago, I reckon, so prices have certainly gone up. But look, I don't see value for money in this. Mm. I like it. I think it's a cool little diorama for display. The little gadgets are fun. They're really, really nicely done. All the little computer screens. There's a little box with a light bulb, you know, like having a light bulb invention moment. There's sort of some render on the wall that's peeled off to reveal the bricks, but some of it's left. So it's nicely done. I'm just not sure it's 300 US nicely done.
Yep, agrees.
All right, we've got the Batman animated series Gotham City by Lego. I don't think anyone had this on their bingo list, and here we are. So this is essentially 85 years of Batman through Warner Brothers and things as they celebrate VIA Lego. This is the biggest set that DC have, you know, released in the Lego form. This is set 76271. It's going to cost you a lot of money, just as much as the sewer lair. So $300 Australian. €259.99 or €299. Maybe I'm getting that mixed up, but it's extremely expensive set. You get four minifigures, so you get Catwoman, Batman, Harley Quinn, and of course the Joker. But this isn't just a huge diorama piece. Like when if someone said, "Oh, we're going to make the animated series Gotham City," and I'll be the first thing I think of is that cool shadow box, Batcave that for '89 that yep. you know sort of folded out.
Well, it was more the Penguin, wasn't it? It was more the Batman Returns one.
Oh, sorry, so it's Batman Returns. And I just thought that was the coolest thing that I have ever seen. Like, that is just fantastic. So I was maybe thinking along those lines that they'd do this. Mm. But this is more like a painting, like a, you know, artistic style painting with the all the elements of Batman animated series in front of it. It's got the whole cityscape. It's got the Bat logo in the air. It's got all the buildings. It's got the
The police blimps.
Yeah, yeah, and even the Batwing and things. There's a Batmobile and stuff, but it's all micro scale. It's all crazy tiny, but then sort of 3D from a wall placard coming out.
Yeah. It's unusual. I don't think Lego have done a lot of sets like this. They've got their sort of artwork ones, which are replicating paintings.
Oceans, you know. Yeah. And like
that's
that.
Probably waves. The one, that Japanese style of wave is probably the closest to this. They've done a few sort of Vincent van Gogh ones. But traditionally, a lot of those are just paintings, so they're very, very 2D. This is like a hybrid, isn't it? Like, it's got a bit of depth, but not heaps.
Yeah.
It's a weird mix. I really love this. I've actually been watching this with Robbie at home, Batman the Animated Series, where we're sort of 40 episodes into this show. And it is a beautiful, beautifully designed show. So I can see why they wanted to capture kind of that Art Deco style of Gotham City. They've really captured the color palette, that kind of red skyline and the blimps. But it just doesn't appeal to me, this kind of hybrid 2D, 3D art style in micro kind of scale.
I do love the big Batman, the text that sits above it. It's really done to look like the style of the writing from the show. It also has a bunch of these little like micro builds that come with it. There's a little bat car and what looks to be Gotham City Police Station, because it's got a little bat symbol on the bat light or whatever they call it on the top. And look, the minifigures are cool. We've sort of seen some of these very similar styled before. I'm sure there are little paint differences and stuff, but yeah, I don't know. Do you think you'd go if the price was $200 as opposed to $300?
Nah, it's not a price issue for me. It's just I'm not a fan of the style of this. I just find it in an odd mix of 2D versus 3D.
What would you want for a BTS?
Look, I would have loved a minifigure scale series of sets. Mm. So I would have loved, you know, the Batmobile. I think, you know, I mean, I know they've done so many Batmobiles that they feel like there's saturation and they're all fairly similar. But I would have loved, you know, like a Batmobile. I would have loved some of the iconic kind of sets.
Yeah.
And maybe to be fair, they would have sort of done or released those sets in the comic book style or the movie style already. So this was a sort of like a sensible pivot to give us something different.
And as usual, Lego have an image of a young mother who's playing with them to really, you know, emphasize, hey guys, it's okay to buy it. Mum says it's cool.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We've been given a time limit, Scott.
2 minutes.
2 minutes each. We got 2 minutes. Clock is counting. I'm. So let's just give a bit of context. So, I know the popcorn bucket. I'm disappointed we didn't have an opportunity to buy that.
Are you really? I'm sure you are.
I don't actually eat popcorn at the cinema.
I saw Brett run in with his popcorn, his chop top. Yeah.
I ended up melting. I was too busy running.
Yeah. My son picked a boysenberry chop top, which he sat eating for about an hour and then's like, I don't want any more, Dad. You can have it. So I received this sloppy, half melted cone. Cone was almost liquefied. Okay. So opening day. Opening day that June was released, I think it was 29th of February. Yep. It was like leap year style. It got released in Australia. Now, at the previous recording session, Scotty, we were booking tickets.
Yes.
And I think we were sort of going, it's a long film, right? So there's not as many showings. And I think we wanted to see in the one and only kind of IMAX cinema we have here in Adelaide.
Biggest screen possible.
I'm not sure if it's a true IMAX, but it's, yeah, something. It's the biggest screen. It had a nice sound system. And we really couldn't fit comfortably into sort of the 7 o'clock session. So we snuck. We did a sneaky, and we went to the 3:40.
Got out of work early.
Went to this and checked it out. And nice. Scotty actually was, you know, running a little bit late to the screening. Missed maybe the first, you know, 2 or 3 minutes. But I got to say, and I was very happy to be seeing this kind of like not 9 o'clock at night when I'm sort of tired from the day, but just fresh, good to go, can concentrate, really, you know, pay attention, and. There was a lot of hype leading into this. Yeah, I think the promotional campaign was big. All the actors were out doing they were going to different capital cities. They were, you know, there was, what was it, Zendaya dressed as like C-3PO with the red carpet. With some clear ass cheek.
Like Cyborg from Justice League, wasn't she?
Cyborg. Yeah. And what's that Metropolis film with that?
Yeah, it is Metropolis.
I've seen that image. I actually didn't even recognize it was Zendaya.
Yeah, that was from the June. Like they were doing all these kind of like screenings or little appearances, but then they did the big one, the actual premiere, and that's what she wore for like 20 minutes before she changed out of that, because you can't.
It showed up in a lot of the Turtles groups of just people just photoshopping Krang into her stomach.
That's fantastic. So this film, we're not going to get into spoilers, but I just want to touch on some of the spectacle. It was goosebump moments, some of the sequences. They were so well executed. It is probably the biggest piece of movie magic I've seen. Like, it's just insane how good some of the sequences were and how seamless the CG is. I don't think there's any scene where you're sitting there going, oh, it's just actors in front of a blue screen. It's just all absolutely seamless. And the performances, amazing. I have to give the wonderful performances by everyone. Austin Butler, though, as Faye Brown,
unbelievable.
Another level.
Didn't even know. If you had no idea who'd been cast in that role, you'd be like, who is this guy? Yeah. Like, what a performance. Mm. Absolutely phenomenally knocked it out the park. If you thought he was good in Elvis and what he did there, he has just elevated his game to like A-plus acting level now.
Yep. Yeah, he was great. So, and there's one sequence, it's in the trailer, so it's not a massive spoiler, but where Paul rides the sandworm for the first time. And, you know, like I was watching it and I felt like I was there with him. It was one of the most engrossing sequences I've seen. Like, I was just captivated by it. But then I couldn't help like flashing back to seeing like June 84, like the version where they're kind of like just sitting on top of this sandworm.
Just riding a horse dressed up as a sandworm.
Oh, it was just flashbacks to how I mean, look, that's 40 years old now, that film, and obviously technology has come a long way, but yeah, just another level of spectacle. Christopher Walken, he was probably the most, you know, he just did Christopher Walken.
That's good.
And it was a bit jarring to, you know,
do a little dance.
He was almost kind of like fly up and do a little shoe shuffle at one point. But
I read somewhere that it's in his contract, if he ever does any sort of on screen stuff, even if it's just a little like half step, he has to do a dance in every film that he's in. Like, it's in his contract.
He
won't sign on to a film unless he goes some sort of some sort of fancy foot something.
Right.
Mm. Yeah, okay. So, I don't recall any sort of dancing.
Did he trip over a rock? That might count.
I saw him paying tribute, but there was definitely no dance steps. He didn't bust a move that I saw. But Christopher Walken, when I saw the casting, it triggered me. I didn't think it was right because Christopher Walken is Christopher Walken. He's become a parody of who he is.
Yes.
Okay. If you
take you out of the film.
That's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
I'm watching it. I'm massively engrossed. And then he comes on screen. I'm like, yeah, cool. And as soon as he opens his mouth and delivers a line of dialect, it's like, cool, now we're going to get more cowbell.
Yeah.
That was the only distracting part, the only negative of the whole film. So I'm happy to put it aside. I'll accept it when I go to watch the film again later on. But yeah, I think they maybe could have done a little bit smarter casting for the Emperor.
Interesting in a movie that's got that many famous people in it, and well-known, you know, Jason Momoa looks like Jason Momoa type thing, that Christopher Walken is the one that, you know, popped you out of the film.
It's the voice. That's all it is.
He's got a very distinctive voice, doesn't he?
If you go back to The Deer Hunter and you watch Christopher Walken there, he's an actor playing a part. Now he just plays Christopher Walken every time he's on set.
Yep. How old is he? He's got to be like 70 or
yeah,
now?
He'd have to be close to 70. Yep.
Mm. There you go.
What about the fopters taking off and things, the ships?
Ships.
Yeah, some nice slow. They certainly didn't rush anything.
Right.
It's an interesting paced film.
Yep.
They spend a lot of time on fairly sort of heavy religious based content, and there are times where I sort of felt okay, it's slowing down, but as soon as that happened, they thrust you into something that is just out of control. Like the sequence on Gaiety Prime, you know, like when that sequence comes, it's just so unique and it's so well shot. So, but they certainly, I think they had to cut, you know, the final battle I felt was probably cut 5 minutes shorter than it would have liked.
Right.
So that they can linger on some of those other moments. And so maybe, you know, like the movies we're used to, you might find like now with the way that they are paced, this might feel a little bit slow. I think it's the right directorial choice to linger and, you know, get that shot of the ship slowly moving off or something. But
yeah.
Look, the visuals are just another level.
Cool.
Yeah.
Excellent. Number three, are we expected? Is it locked in? What's happening? Children of June, is
it? Yeah, so what happens, I think, after... So this was June, the book.
Yes.
They split it into two parts. And then, I'm no expert on this, but I think the next one is June Messiah, which then follows, again, kind of like the Jihad or the Holy War. And then you get into Children of June, and I think there's one more.
Okay.
June Legacy or something. Now, from what I understand, Villeneuve is putting pen to paper on a potential script, right? So he's sort of writing, yeah, he's thinking what it might look like in terms of writing a script. Who's the filmmaker here? Like the studio? Whoever the studio, Legendary Pictures or whoever's the studio, they've come out and they basically say, I mean, it's made a ton of money.
Yes,
it's a critical success. They've said, look, if Villeneuve can come up with a story and a direction and a production that is going to be of the same quality of what we just got, we're going to go for it. Now, that is almost like a no-brain comment. Like, of course you are. If you get a good script and Villeneuve is going to produce another, you know, a film of this quality, you would be stupid to go, no, I'm not going to do it. Of course they're going to do it. So they've planted the seeds, and therefore I think, and Villeneuve is a massive Dune fan. If you'd asked him, what film do you want to direct in your entire career? His number one answer would be Dune.
Cool.
So I would be astounded if this doesn't get turned into a third film. They haven't said that. They haven't greenlit it. But all the talk is it's going to happen.
Cool. Rating out of 19, boys.
100% into 19. Like, without question, the buzz and the sensation, I'm thinking in my head now of the score from the film and how electric it was, perfectly matched to every scene, every action in that movie. The music, I can't remember the last time I watched a film at the cinema where the music created...
Batman, not. Sorry. Danny Elfman. Yeah, right. Prince.
Where the score gave you an emotional response, where you were in tune with all your senses, what was on screen, and you were just so utterly engrossed in what was going on. It pretty much the perfect film.
Yep. I'd give it a 19. Oh, look, I'd say you know, for Frank's comment or how he enjoyed the first one, you know, not rushing out to see it. I don't think it's going to change much. It's very similar in tone.
Which makes sense.
The first one. So I think it is what it is. But I think most people would appreciate the level of detail that's gone into making this and the quality of filmmaker that's gone into it. You can probably pick, you know, flaws here and there on
Christopher
things.
Walken.
Yeah, like you could say, you know, or you could say the pacing in certain bits or where they focused on, you know, this. And I think there's some memes coming out of Stilgar. So Javier Bardem and Stilgar, like, because, you know, you got the Paul as this sort of reluctant messiah figure. And it's sort of like everything Paul does, you know, Stilgar's like, he's the messiah, you know. And it's like, you know, there's memes of him like flipping over like a card, like, you know, doing a card trick. And is this your card? He's like, he's the messiah. Yeah. So it's there's a lot of those moments you might not connect with as much as you could have. But they're very small. Mm. They're very small criticisms. So I'd give it a 19.
Yeah. Cool. The religious undertone is pretty heavy in the film, so some people might find that a little bit dragging. But look, you run into this film, there's no slow start here. The first opening scene of this film, and that's what I walked into when I came to the cinema and the movie was already underway, insane. Like, Harkonnen's floating up a mountain with like jetpacks, and it's just like, this is insanely good. I can't believe I'm walking into the cinema and it's like, holy shit, I'm engrossed instantly with what's going on in the on the scene. And it was just engrossing, so captivating.
Yeah, I'll go to a Marvel film. This is not to shit or poo-poo on Marvel films, but you sort of go in and you'll see a special effects shot and you kind of go, well, it's Chris Pratt. He's on a wire. There's a screen behind him. Everything looks digital. And it sort of just takes me as a viewer out of the film. This I'm watching, this reminds me of, like, you know, Stanley Kubrick's Space Odyssey. And there's a scene in that where he's basically running around a space station.
2001?
What did I say? 2001 Space Odyssey.
Yep.
And then I didn't realize, I'm like, how are they doing it? How are they filming this?
Yep.
I didn't realize that he's just running on the spot. And it's like they're a hamster rotating. Wheel. It's rotating. Yep. But like, it just looks so real because it is real, right? This opening sequence, it's nothing like... They've done it in Marvel films. They've done similar sequences. But what's different about it is just how real it looks, how integrated it is. You go, how are they doing it?
Yep.
I don't know how they're doing it. And I just can't compute because it looks perfectly real. That I think is the brilliance of this film in the special effects. And it's a good reminder to Hollywood to go, you know, it can be done. Yeah, these can actually not look like the Uncanny Valley.
With the right artist direction, it can be done.
Yeah.
Yep.
And not maybe rushing your VFX people to...
Look, I'm sure.
Cutting their budget for another film, potentially. Exactly. Yeah. Brett, you a Dune fan or...?
I saw the original movie many, many years ago, and then once again the part one of this when it came out of the cinema. But outside of playing Dune 2000 and Dune... on the old Pentium back in the day. That's not, you don't really have much knowledge on it, but yeah, awesome game. So,
you keen to see Dune 2 or is
I'm
it
very
on the
keen.
Card?
Yep. We were going to see it last weekend. I think, when did it come? Yeah, it came out last. Mm. Yeah. And then I think we had something on, and then Sarah didn't want to go see two movies in a row. Yeah. And then I was coming on here and. So I think we'll see it next weekend. Cool. Yeah,
shout out to Sam Cripps and Bryony. They're seeing it right now.
Yeah. Oh, very good. Oh,
there you go.
Well, mate, cool, I think we did pretty well to keep that under 2 minutes. That that was amazing. Yeah.
1:59 and 2. Okay, stop.
Yeah, it was perfect. More of a June 2 minutes.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. We're going on to our next segment.
Whoa, dude. Nice score.
Ben, you've got a Ferrero Rocher.
I love my Ferrero Rocher box. They're so multi-useful. So last night, and this is no, you know, disrespect to Brett and things for my last, you know, later score type thing. Osti also has been to Japan not long after Brett just got back. And Osti sent me quite a few photos of, look what I found, look what I found. And then he walked into the mother load, right? And I'm not just talking about loose beasts. He walked into a shop where I think they had at least 30 plus boxed beasts, right? And it just
talking battle beasts.
Battle beasts. So I'm so sorry. battle beasts and things. And it was
not
just
one of those
like
shops.
It was it was the biggest collection he'd ever seen in Japan. You know, only one shop. And it's just like, oh my gosh, I can't stretch my money that far. So I had to pick. And he zoomed in on and things. And of course, me being a Aussie and a patriotic Australian animal fan, I picked out the killer koala and kickback kangaroo because they're the Australian ones. Ideally, I would have loved a croc to the yin and yang for my pirate lion because he's the leader of the Decepticons. But the next best thing were these two Australian animals. And I believe these, of all the battle beasts, these are probably the most iconic Australian animals of the battle beast line, aside from the platypus, which diving duckbill, which was not available at the time. But so he brought me these back. They are boxed, which is absolutely, you know, just mind-blowing that my little box collection is growing. Kickback Kangaroo comes in the traditional green sort of Transformers grid pattern box, which is just absolutely sensational. Comes with this really cool, realistic card, which I just... That's what I love about these beasts is the card and things. And Brett was so amazingly able to get some of the cards loose without the boxes and things, which is just unheard of. Only these cards and things were only ever released in Japan.
So these are original.
These are 100%
wow,
original.
Wow, that art is very unique.
Yeah, so Kickback Kangaroo is a very realistic looking version. And then Killer Koala, he's very comic book-esque.
Yeah,
and,
they're right.
And there are different backgrounds and things that you can get. And the Killer Koala comes in sort of like a jungle box, which is a bit of a variant box and things, which is different to any of the boxes I've got in my collection, which is pretty cool. And now I just need to find the red box. There's a red grid box that I'd like, upon me saying, yes, I'll take them, and I like looking at my boxes, I'm like, oh, man,
looks
I've
like a Transformer.
I've got quite a few green ones and things, and now I need to add a red box. So that's on the bucket list next.
To clarify, these are ones you already have loose, but this
correct.
Is
yeah. So I've got the whole line of all the battle beasts, all 76 loose, and now I'm starting, you know, the very ugly, you know, transition into a few boxes, and I'm very picky because they, you know, they're next level expensive. Yep. Like they're not cheap at all. And the cool thing is, if you take these out of the boxes, they've got the Takara sticker on the bottom of their feet. Mm-hmm. So that's proper released only in Japan type thing. Nice. So differentiating.
Should we take a look now?
Yeah, you can open it.
Oh, right. I was joking.
No, it's all good. I had to take the cards out to open them. Before I got these from Austie last night, I picked up I sent some beasts to a fellow Australian who's a battle beast collector, along with some little extras like some weapons and things. I've got like that many snakes. I'm like, here's a snake weapon as well. You know, it was not going to be missed. All free of charge, all, you know, from one collector to another. Yeah, I know you're missing these. Here's some gap fillers and things. And he then was that appreciative of my helpfulness. He sent back one of the mid-12 laser beasts.
Laser beasts?
This is very expensive. This is, this is probably one. That one is worth two of these boxed.
Right.
So very, very expensive little figure, especially in Australia. No weapon because that's, even again, more expensive. And he appropriately comes with the wood emblem inside. Mm-hmm. Beautiful condition and everything. So that is flight deer. And number two in the battle beast is a deer, and it's a very cool looking deer with the visor and the drill gun arm. Mm. This guy is like a stag, got proper stag horns, multi-leveled, horns and things. It's so cool. It is the king of the deers if you were to – name it. So I've now got two mid-range laser beasts, and I've just secured a third.
Oh, there
I've
this
paid
is,
for
is
it. The and
2024 goal.
No. They're so expensive. I'm so addicted to them. They are just so much fun, and I'm just so thankful that, people like Brett and Austie and things go to on their little Japan trips and able to shop for me and get them, because – online, I'd be paying over $100 more than what I'm paying for from getting them through the friends and local community, which is just amazing. So thank you, everybody. Nice. Can't thank you enough. I just love these little guys. So cool.
Beautiful. Nice. Nicely done. I've got a couple of things here I want to show you. The first one, a big thank you to Nick Greenslade, who put me on to the JB $30 sale of the...
he's brought in a clear tub with a towel. I'm worried there's like an injured bird or
he's
something.
He's having a go at my Ferrero Rocher thing. And he's,
Well, funnily enough, I found a baby ringtail possum this morning.
Yeah.
And here it is.
Yeah, pretty much. No, I took it to
and
the vet.
And there it goes.
It was so cute. Callum brought it home and we took it to the vet. But now, what I've got here is from one of my favorite films. This is from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. It is the Sean Connery Dr.
Nice.
Henry Jones Sr. there. What is amazing, what I love about him is he comes with removable spectacle.
Oh.
And they look, sometimes you get a figure and they put glasses on
figures hard.
Hard to do. This and Jürgen Foller from the Dial of Destiny both have the removable spectacles and they are the best I've seen. Mm. They are fantastic. He's got the bucket hat that comes on and off as well. He comes with his trusty umbrella, which is always useful for seagulls.
Yes, yes.
Taking out a Messerschmitt. And he also comes with his Grail diary, which is very cool. And I think in here I've got just so much. Oh, yeah. And he's got his trusty satchel as well, which he's always carrying around. I'm a big Sean Connery fan. Love the film. And it's so, I mean, to many people, it would be a very boring sort of figure, old guy in a suit. Mm. But this means a lot to me. And he came with, I think, six others in this line, and you get to build a table from the end sequence with all the cups.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah,
and you get the cup, the actual cup of the Holy Grail.
Grail, yeah.
And I think you can get a myriad of other cups that'll turn you into dust, which is fantastic.
Did you put any water in the cup and give it a crack?
No. I didn't want to take the risk.
I mean, you never know. One in a million, maybe.
So as far as Sean Connery figures in your collection, what number are we up to now? So aside from the Indiana Jones vintage or whatever you've got.
It is a good question. I had a James Bond.
Yes,
so like from Goldfinger, but I did sell that at the toy fair. So that was, I think that's Sean Connery Bond.
Gold, 100% Gold. Bond. Yep.
I'm trying to think if I have any more.
Well, he stopped acting like 20 years ago, didn't he?
Yeah, so I mean, what else has he done? Movies. The Rock? There's no Rock and there's no League of Extraordinary Gentlemen figure. No, I don't think they did.
Medicine Man, they didn't release any toys for that movie.
No.
Well, Untouchables, I mean.
No.
Entrapment, nothing.
I wouldn't have minded a Catherine Zeta-Jones, but.
from Entrapment.
Yeah. In the cat suit that she wears. I think it probably is my first.
There you go. Cool.
Now, I've got a special mention to something a toy company we never talked about on Toy Power. I thought that was quite interesting. It's a company called Joy Toy.
We are is this a safe for work?
Japanese, Japanese shop again, isn't it?
Family-friendly show, right?
No, they do some of the most amazing Warhammer 40K figures.
Freaking hell.
Now, these are sort of, I guess they call them 3¾-inch. But you know what the Warhammer aesthetic is like? Mm. They're big, chunky, beefy figures. Now, McFarlane did a line of Warhammer. I think they started about 2 years ago. They did both colored versions and sort of these black and white artist proofs. But I found them, they were sort of 7-inch and they just were too big.
Mm.
I love the fact these are 4-inch scale, but they're done with so much attention to detail. The paint apps on these are absolutely incredible, and the articulation is wonderful too. They come with a whole heap of accessories. He's got this shield that has so much beautiful detail on it, the backpack, the blaster. He's even got a little sword and scabbard. I think these are fantastic.
The articulation looks mental. Is it as good as it looks, or
it's pretty good?
Yeah,
for
all the armor that's on him.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep. They're very sturdy. For the small size.
Have you seen the Lego ones? They've got like a regular Lego mini figure, and there's like, let's make it into a Warhammer, and they put that much bits and pieces on it. It doesn't look like a Lego figure anymore. Yeah, it just looks like a mini Warhammer character.
Yep.
All these extra bolts and stuff. It's just,
I mean, with the legacy of Warhammer and that, you need to paint these things well. Like, you can't afford to have them just sort of schlockily done, because it's all, you know, it's painting the figures is what they do. And he looks gorgeous.
Yeah, the paint apps on this is probably up with the best action figure paint applications I've got in my collection. And it is testament to that smaller scale that, you know, the pressure's on to get it right, and they've certainly delivered. So it's impressive.
More like they do got a whole line of these. Like,
yeah, there seems to be hundreds from what I've looked. This is something like,
so
I said.
You started a new collection then?
No, I haven't.
He's going to start playing chess with them.
That's right. There's so many in there. A lot of sort of repaints and redos, well. But there's figures on there that, you know, like, full Emperor style with all the different gear, and
they do all the different races as well. Like mainly the
Space Marine seems to be the key, but they've got this, I think, what are they called? Second Sisters.
Yep.
Is that right? They're sort of in black and white and red.
Yep.
And there's a couple of sort of like chaos versions of
the
these.
Chaos Marines,
there's like almost Terminator-style exoskeletons.
That's exactly what they're called, Terminators.
Terminator, right? Yeah. Terminator?
Yep, yep.
But not a lot of the orcs, from what I can tell.
From a distance, he looks like a statue. But then turning him around and looking at him really in depth, you can tell there's articulation. So that is a true testament to how wicked this sculpt is. That's mad. What does this sort of thing set you back in Australian?
So this is where you go to, probably AliExpress is the best place to get these from. And AliExpress is weird, because it'll be like $100 down to $50. Mm-hmm. So this sort of what I'd call almost like a basic figure, you can generally get for about $50 Australian. Right. Yep. If you wanted sort of like a beefed up version, you might have to pay $100, something like that. But they probably hover between 50 and 100. But they seem so. I don't know what a regular retail price on these are, or if AliExpress just hyperinflates and then reduces down to kind of a normal price.
Yep.
But look, I'd say if you can get your hands on one of these for 50 Australian,
doing well,
it's a pretty good price considering what you can sort of get locally for 40 to 50 bucks these days. I think,
which isn't much.
Not much. Yeah. Not much. Right.
Yeah.
So very, very happy with that Joy Toy. Officially licensed Warhammer product.
Yep. Be careful Googling that.
Joytoy. Yes. Yeah, be careful.
Very good. I don't have a lot of... excuse me, I'll just hand that back to Trent. I don't have a lot of latest scores. I've been saving my money for our holiday. What I did get in the other day, and it's on my shelf, so I'll pass this card around, but it's basically a Diamond Select sort of miniature bust of Supergirl as she would appear in the sort of animated series. So she's got the white sort of top on and the white gloves. It's one of those sort of half bust things, so she's already on the shelf over there. But the other thing I did get was a tasty little email. No sooner we were talking about the, what was it, Wave 9 Ultimates. And what happened to, you know, 7 and 8? Turns out 7's on its way. Probably arrive in the next week when I'm not at work for 3 weeks. So that's that's going to be fun.
Which one? What's in 7 again?
Is that the Triceraton?
Yeah, I think it's Triceraton. Is it Robot, like the repaint of Metalhead?
Ah, yes.
Space Cadet Raph, I think, as well.
Yep.
Yeah, I forget.
And then one of the Rocksteady or Bebop?
The Metal Robo.
Yeah.
Robo Bebop, I think. Right. Yeah.
That'd be cool now that you've got the originals.
Yeah, now they've got all the originals for them. Yeah. So, so that should arrive shortly. But yeah, other than that, pretty quiet for me.
Mm.
Brett.
Brett, go for it.
What have I got? I've got a few comics, nothing special. I'm trying to think. Oh, actually, I got one that might help Scott out as well. I bought a new copy of Fantastic Four 37. It's the first appearance of the Frightful Four.
Oh, so good.
And so now I have two. So if any of you guys want it, otherwise I'll put it up on Facebook.
Yeah. I'll bid a dollar more than Scott.
Yeah. So yeah. Oh, actually, yeah, Scott, you might want it. Maybe I could see it. Yeah. So I got that. I got a few other comics. Nothing really stands out, but I mean, you know, when you go on a weird phase, you like pick like a toy line or whatever, and then you just go nuts on it.
Yeah.
I've spent so much money on Marvel collector cards from the 90s in the last like 3 months. Just 90s. Stupid.
Where do you get them from? Locally, or you have to online, or?
I've got a few locally, a few off Marketplace. Yep. A guy was selling his whole collection. So I've, as he's gone through, I've picked bits out.
Yeah.
Sent me lists every now and then. Yeah, eBay. I got 2 sets from the US just because, even though I was paying like $70 shipping, it was still cheaper than getting it here.
Yeah, sometimes, so, yeah. Yep.
But yeah, I did a Brett and made a giant checklist of every Marvel card set that's been released since the early 80s until actually 1999. There was no Marvel cards released, so I stopped there. And now I'm trying to get every single set.
Oh, man. Wow. What are we talking? Like hundreds? Are there, you know?
Cards would be in the tens of thousands. Jesus, easy. More than that, 100,000
plus. No, I mean, oh, yeah, what I'm saying is hundreds of sets. Or
as for sets, yeah. Right. Like, I don't know, it went from maybe 7 or 8 a year from 1988 up to, you know, mid-90s. They were doing, you know, 10, 12, 13, and then back down. So, but it got... The original ones were just, they just released 50 cards and they were just like pictures from the comic.
Yes.
Yep.
And then it went to like 200 cards and then like holograms that you can only get one in every, you know, 100 packets and all this kind of random stuff. So it's been fun. Luckily, I had a lot of them from when I was a kid, got them myself. So it's just a matter of going and getting the ones kind of before I got into comics around 1994.
Yep.
Before that. And yeah, I luckily, Tony from the old Adelaide Comic Centre, Tony Albanese, he still had all his stock from his shop.
Yeah, yep.
So
yep.
I pilfered that. Went down there with Osti one day and we loaded up. So that was good. That was a big help.
It took me like 25 years to complete my Batman Returns collection. Those damn gold cards and the stickers, because I had all the stickers and I put them all on the cover, on the binder of the collection. So then I wanted them, you know, all pristine again, and that took me so long. I still don't have the hologram, so you know, so I feel for you, man. It's a long journey.
it's fun though, like
it is.
And it's not a space issue. Like I've got a shelf now. It's about 20 odd folders now. And it's just like every set's like a few kind of sets in one folder. It's been good because OCD's sorting things as well, so everything's labeled and there's room for when I get this set, I can slide it straight
in. And you leave gaps for
there's gaps. Yeah. So there's like empty sleeves where I don't have any of the the cards and stuff like that. Nice. So it's been a good little project when currently building a house and everything's in storage, so all I have is a tiny little room in an apartment to live out of, so to house in my toy room kind of thing. So it's been good. I think that's...
And the biggest, bestest haul from Japan, what was that?
Oh. where do we start? I think I got some Mego Spider-Man, so that was good. So I now have every Mego Spider-Man that was released except for, I've got the Japanese loose, but I don't have the Japanese one in box. It's actually made by a different company. So, yeah, it's... I've only ever found one on eBay and it was like $1,200 US.
Whoa.
So I'll probably never get it. Yeah. Unless someone's willing to gift it to me, that'd be great. Yeah, my address is. So that was good getting some more Migos. I'm really trying to get into them. The carded ones are hard to find. There was only certain ones released in Australia, the later ones. So it's pretty much have to hunt them overseas to get the earlier 70s stuff. I got a ton of Toy Biz.
Yep.
Carded stuff, which was just, I went into the shop and it was actually this era that we went to. It's like a lot of retro games and, you know, all the kind of like where I'd get the Laserbeast and stuff.
Yep.
I later found out that it's 6 stories high. I was on the second story when I had Brett, we're going from Sarah. You've been here for 2.5 hours. And I'm like, but I've only done one floor. Like,
yes. 5 more to go.
And yeah, but then I think I'd very much outdone my wallet in what I'd bought in just those few hours. And yeah, got this store. It was, because most of it's like Japanese, like, stuff over there, obviously it's Japan.
Yes.
But this was very American, like superheroes, like Star Wars, stuff like that. So obviously me collecting American comics was a lot more appealing to me than Scott, the millions and bazillions of Godzilla figures in every single
overload, no doubt.
Oh, there's anything wrong with Godzilla. So yeah, I bought quite a lot of toy biz there, some real old stuff. Harder to get things. What else did I get? I can't remember.
You got that crazy, wacky Spider-Man in the box or something, didn't you? Was that Amigo?
Yeah.
Okay.
And yeah, that's.
And the Sentinel?
Yeah, I got a Toy Biz Sentinel. It's all Japanese on the box. I don't think it was released in any other way except that. And it's weird. Like, it has like a cage you can put in its chest, and it like then when you hit it in the head, the cage opens and it, like, the figure jumps out of the Sentinel's chest, and I don't know, it's all really weird. I can't read the instructions, so I don't know what's going on. So a bunch of other weird little things, and obviously the Battle Beasts and stuff. There was stuff like that.
Thank you so much. That was so cool.
The Transformers over there, guys, like, God, boxed G1 stuff, everything, like, mint perfect. Like, it's insane, like, the volume of it over there.
So, yeah.
And for someone that doesn't collect it, I could definitely wanted to fork out a lot of money for a lot of these things. So,
well, I certainly got an appreciation for how deep the Japanese line went in that art book that I got. And I'm just flicking pages and seeing all these recolors and redos and, you know, the train combiners and all these things. I'm like, wow, man, like, this is my first, you know, I can go on the internet and search it all up, but sometimes it's different just to discover it in your own different way. And I was just blown away by it.
I sent you some of the photos
Overlord and everything, like, just the ones that you just so last end of the line for us. And yeah, there they are in Japan, still in box, just, you know, incredible. Yeah.
Sounds amazing. Yeah. I've got to get to Japan myself and check this out.
Yeah.
Your suitcases won't be big enough to hold the tails of the Zillas.
Mate, who needs to bring clothes? It's just empty suitcases, isn't it?
That's what ended up happening.
We went to the vending machines and get the clothes from there.
I went with half a suitcase. We came back with 4. So Sarah had about 2/3 a suitcase. I had half a suitcase. We came back with 4 and a bunch of carry-on. So
nice.
But that
that's
was
why
a,
you do it.
A bit of her as well. So, yeah.
But fantastic.
I've had several boxes turn up after a fairly dry sort of toy start to the year, and one of which we're going to talk about in next week's episode. I've been waiting for near on 2 years. It feels like a whole lot longer, but right now I'm going to talk about the delivery I got from Marksman's Collectibles. They received a couple of weeks back the NECA Ultimate Flash Gordon figures that represent the amazing, absolutely killer, my childhood favorite movie, Flash Gordon 1980. And in this wave, you get Flash Gordon himself, you get Ming the Merciless, and for the first time I'm aware of, we get Prince Voltan, Brian Blessed himself, in all his glory. And NECA have essentially gone back to the drawing board here. They've done fresh sculpts, and they've got likenesses or licensing for the likenesses of each of these actors for the first time. Rather than what we've had previously, where there's been very comic book interpretations of Flash and Ming, very bulky and muscular, these look like the actual actors fresh off the screen of the movie themselves. So Sam Jones, unmistakable, that long flowing hair down to his shoulders, you can pick the smile, the eyes on his face. His build is a genuine human being who walked off the screen, a superhero from the 80s, essentially. Max von Sydow as as Ming the Merciless, 100%. It is absolutely perfectly him. Brian Blessed is just, he's in, he is the standout figure in this wave. Each of the figures come with, being an ultimate, three different heads. So you can choose whether you want that smile, the sneer, or just the hell yelling scream as you're charging into battle. Various accessories for them to hold in their hands, as well as the hands to go with them for the different sort of poses and holding of those particular weapons. And as I said, the standout figure is Brian Blessed. Mm. Like, he comes with a huge set of wings, so you can have him in a flight pose, and that's how he is on my shelf. And I went and captured some images from the movie themselves. So there is a famous scene towards the end of the film where all the Hawkmen are in flight heading to the Imperial Palace, and they're carrying Dale, and they've got... and I've forgotten the name of the character here. How embarrassing. But essentially, they are flying into battle towards the end of the scene. And Brian Blessed, wings out, he's got his big club in his hand, and he's just got his jaw open in a battle scream. He's got his eyes are glinting with madness, and you can see it in the face of the figure as well. The big bushy beard. You've got the helmet that you can put on me as well, which just sells the lunacy of what is about to happen. It is a magical interpretation of this figure. Honestly, I didn't think I'd ever get him to put on the shelf. Yeah. I knew we'd always get a Ming and another Flash because they're always going to sell hand over fist. Now I am anticipating an announcement from NECA that we're going to see more figures.
Yep. Who's on the bucket list?
I'd love to see Prince Baron.
Right.
Clytus. I reckon we're going to see a Dale Arden. That'll have to happen. But if we're going to do a Dale Arden, I want to see a Princess Aura as well. Listening back to previous episodes of Toy Power, I may or may not have had mixed feelings about Princess Aura seeing her on the screen for the first time. But there's so many different characters you could do from this film. There's a lot of repaints you could do for different costumes from out the film as well. So very, very excited. I took my time unpacking them and doing different poses and bits and pieces. And yeah, they're right up front there with sitting underneath Shogun Warriors Godzilla, next shelf down. Prime place. Excellent. Very, very happy.
Nice. Well done.
Nice.
Love it.
Yeah,
those shots of Voltar.
Yeah.
They're just crazy. Crazy good, and just that expression. Love it. That is fantastic. Brett, thanks for coming in. We're going to catch you next week to chat some retro cinema and some future plans as well. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of Toy Power. And to all our patrons, thank you so much for your ongoing support and chatter on the Discord. Stay safe, take care of one another, and we will see you around the toy aisles.
And until next time, good journey!
You can find the Toy Power team at all the usual online places. Facebook.com/ToyPowerPodcast, at Toy Power Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram, or have your say and email us, ToyPowerPodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show on both iTunes and Stitcher, and please leave us a review. Otherwise, we just assume we're awesome.